You're listening to another ambitious EntrepreneurNetwork.com podcast, the voice for entrepreneurs and small business. Now, onto the show.
Welcome to Business Women Australia podcast, the podcast for ambitious women who are serious about business success and leadership development, keen to increase their knowledge and skills.
And welcome to episode 11 of a Business Women Australia podcast. I'm your host, Anne-Marie Cross, the podcasting queen. Joining me on today's show is Heather Warner. Heather has 30 years experience in organisational development, industrial relations and human resource management across both private, public and not-for-profit sectors in WA, East Coast and UK, including Rio, Great Central Mines and ASG. She established a company, WCA People and Culture Solutions, in 2000 and now employs 8 staff. And on today's show, Heather's going to share simple tips to manage and prevent poor performance, how to have clear and courageous performance conversations that make a difference, as well as why the current trend away from traditional annual performance appraisals doesn't really mean the end of performance management, and so much more. So welcome to the show, Heather.
Thank you so much, Anne-Marie. It's nice to be here.
The topic that you want to talk about today, of course, is all about how to manage, how to prevent poor performance, as well as really having those conversations that's going to empower and inspire our team to be their best. And that's something that so many businesses, sadly, struggle with, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's such a challenge. It's often the thing that keeps managers awake at night. It's the first thing you think of when you wake up in the morning if you've got a staffing challenge. So yeah, it's often really taking up a lot of time and energy.
Yeah. And you know, as we know, our team are one of the most important assets in our business. So we want to make sure that they are working to their full performance and, of course, that we provide in the right environment in which we can do so. So let's talk about some of the things we need to be aware of that will enable us to manage and, of course, prevent poor performance.
Look, I think the most important thing is to recognise that you need to have those conversations. The conversations need to be clear and candid at the beginning of the employment relationship and throughout the employment relationship, setting expectations.
Do you find that businesses then or leaders then, when they're thinking about having a conversation, that number one, they try and avoid that because it's awkward having conversations, and sometimes you know, it's with someone who we really do trust and like, but something's just not happening and they're not performing to you know, the expectations that the organization has set. Why do you think we're struggling with having these conversations?
I think there's a couple of things that happen, Anne-Marie. Managers within businesses, you know, we're all really time poor typically. And so you'll often find there's the situation where managers are sort of having those conversations on the fly. So you're thinking that you're being clear about perhaps expectations that you've set. And look, you know, this has happened to me this week. I thought that I was clear about a particular expectation for a staff member. And when I looked at the email afterwards, I thought, actually, it wasn't very clear at all. So, you know, we all do it. So that's you know, that's the sort of the mistake that we make without intending to. And then it's going back and redoing it. And, of course, maybe there's already concerns that have been raised, or maybe there's already some damage that's been done potentially with a client or whatever. I think the other part, which I think is where you're, you know, leading to, is avoiding the conversation because, as you say, the person's good in so many ways. They're doing a great job in a lot of areas, but there's just this thing that isn't working quite so well. Maybe it's because they're always late. Maybe it's because, you know, they are, you know, a bit rude to some of the other staff members. You know, it's those types of things where we're sort of going, oh, everything else is okay. So I'll just see if it improves. I'll just kind of live with it for a bit. But unfortunately, the longer you live with it, the more damage that's done.
Yes. And that's something that you mentioned earlier around when we're having these conversations, we need to ensure that we're clear right at the beginning of their employment and then throughout as well. Do you find that it's because we don't address it when it happens and have that open conversation? Hey, you know, and we're going to talk about to how to have some of those clear and courageous performance conversations. Mm-hmm. Is it because we're not addressing it when we should? Is it the timing factor too? If we addressed it right where it was happening, we wouldn't have the heartache that so often we see happen in organisations.
Absolutely. That is absolutely what happens 90% of the time. We allow something, and in effect, by allowing something to happen, Anne-Marie, we're actually condoning that behaviour. Mm. And so it will just continue.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I think also too, in some organisations' case, you know, we hire a team because there is a new project or the workload has gotten so great that the existing team can't support that workload. Mm. And we haven't put into place clear parameters, clear guidelines. Because often, you know, as team, they're not clear on what they need to do. So I think we need to set those expectations even before we communicate them. You find that too across organisations?
Yes, that's correct. Mm. And I think the other thing is that in our current workplaces, change is happening so much more rapidly and so much more frequently. You know, the goalposts are moving all the time. Mm. Change is so apparent in our workplace, so much more so than it has been, you know, over the last sort of 20 years. It's just increased in its rate.
Yes.
And so you're kind of managing on the fly all of the time. So the adaptability of managers and the subsequent teams is really important. And part of that is of course, changing expectations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting you should say that, because I remember many, many decades ago when I first started working, it was with complete interest where I would observe a leader, a manager, who would often, because of the changing demands of clients, in a flap, would go running out to the factory to, sorry, drop that, we need to swip, you know, change gears and so forth. His continual disruption of their team caused the poor performance. As leaders, we need to be very mindful about how we approach our team, don't we? And yes, there may be pressures on us, but we want to manage those conversations in a way that's not going to disrupt the environment and the way in which our team works. Love some insights around that too.
Yeah, look, I think that's a really valuable point. As leaders, someone shared with me one time that I think as a leader, you're like a lightning rod, and you attract the lightning, but you have to be the calm. You have to then direct it and channel that lightning. I always thought that was a really interesting analogy.
It is.
But as a in a broader sense, you know, to actually respond to your question, I think the thing is that there are different styles, there are different approaches, different communication that's required for different people. Mm-hmm. And a really good leader is a leader that actually has the insight to recognize that for Jane, I need to keep her up to date all of the time. I need to, you know, keep her informed with everything that's happening because she needs to know everything. Mm. With Bob over here, I just need to give him the overall view and then leave him to it, because if I kind of interrupt him, I get in his way and it actually flusters him more. Mm-hmm. And then with John over here, I need to set some really clear expectations and I need to tell him when he needs to come back to me with some feedback as to how he's going. And I need to really actually interrogate that, not just the how's it going, John? Oh, good, okay, great, you're going well. You actually need to have the real conversation around, so show me where you're up to, okay, and how's that going? Is there anything that you still need help with? Understanding what's the next step? What are you planning? You know, those kinds of conversations.
Mm-hmm. As leaders, are we achieving that, or is there a room for improvement and growth in recognising our team's communication preferences?
Look, I think, Anne-Marie, we all can always improve in this area. And of course, we have team members that they're people as well. So they're not just a robot that, you know, one size fits them all of the time. We've already established that not one size fits all. But,
yes. But
you know, John and Jane and I can't remember Bob, they're not always operating in exactly the same mode at all times. They've got things that are going on for them at home or at work or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so that's impacting how they're having a conversation, how they're showing up to the conversation as well. So we need to be constantly adapting our approach to, you know, and that's through asking questions as well. We'll get to that in a minute around those requests. Mm-hmm. It's actually asking them good questions as to where they're at and actually stopping and listening.
Yeah. I know for some leaders, particularly those that have a really direct approach, say it how it is, calls a spade a spade. And we're dealing with team members who really value a bit of the softly approach, if you will, and a bit more, nurturing. For them, coming up with the kind of questions that will allow that dialogue can be really difficult. Do you have some example scripts that you can share for those of people who are listening today and think, I can't even think, how do I even approach that?
The start is as leaders, let's be the leader first, because I think the person whose behaviour we can only change is our own.
Yes.
We can't expect everyone else to change their behaviour to accommodate for me. You know, I think the first step is, recognising what is a clear request. And a clear request is basically something that's, a SMART request. We've heard that acronym before, I think, Anne-Marie, but, you know, just to go through it, something that's specific, measurable, achievable, realistic and timely. So the can you do X for me to Y standard by Z time frame would be the example. So that's a nice, clear request.
Yes. Yeah.
If we don't have all of those elements in that request, and sometimes it's implicit, but if we don't have all of those elements in that request, implicit or otherwise, chances are it's not going to be delivered to the level that you want or in the time frame that you want or to the person that you want.
Yeah.
So I think that's the starting point. And that's the request from the manager.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I sort of talked about in my preparation for you was the sloppy request. So the sloppy request is, you know, is that flyby request where you're sort of running past your employee and you say, oh, you all good to get, you know, the report out to John this afternoon? And then off I go to my next meeting. Now, the lovely person I've just left that request with, it was a sloppy request. It sort of said this afternoon, so it gave a time frame. It talked about the report, but it certainly didn't talk about the standard of the report that I want to John. Now, maybe that's really, really clear, but maybe it's not. And so, you know, therefore that poor employee is left kind of wondering, and I'm now in a meeting, so I'm now uncontactable. So they have to make the best of that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, also as leaders, if you approach that in a way that is a smart way, creating an environment in which that team member can come back with a conversation to us, so it doesn't feel like they're going to have their head bitten off kind of thing, so that they can say, well, actually, so-and-so has given me additional work, you know, because they need to juggle them. They need to find out how you know, complex is this and how critical is that, so that we can help them make the decision as to what needs to be done first. If we can't provide those environments in which they feel safe to even have that conversation, it's going to be very difficult for us to have performance conversations down the track if we need to. Yes,
absolutely. And I think the the flip side to that smart request is the effective response. Now, there's actually only 5 possible responses to any request, and that forms the commitment loop. So yes is one.
Yeah.
No is another. The commit to commit later. So I actually can't answer that now, Anne-Marie, but I can get back to you by 5 o'clock today and have a look at it for you. So I'm not actually saying I'll do it. It's not a yes, but it's a I will definitely look at it by this time. That's the commit to commit later. Then there's the counter offer. I can't get it to you by 5, but I could certainly get it to you first thing tomorrow morning. That's the counter offer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the 4. And then there's the plus 1. And that's the slippery maybe. And the slippery maybe, if you know, just to give an example, the slippery maybe is, and we all work with people like this, and we have clients and suppliers like this. Oh, John, can you get that report to me this afternoon? Yeah, I can definitely look at it. So is that a yes? No. Is it a no? No. What is it? It's a slippery maybe. And I think in a lot of organisations we get really good at getting into the slippery maybe territory, because it's a way for a lot of us to say no without saying no.
Yeah.
I think, unfortunately, for staff members, it's difficult to say no to colleagues and certainly to your boss. And there's an implied requirement to do whatever your boss says to do. Mm-hmm. But I guess you need to be aware that those four options, let's not include the slippery maybe, those four other options, yes, no, commit to commit later or counter offer, are all valid options. And I think we've lost them or their definition in our vernacular in business. And we sort of all do the yes when we really either have no way in the world of achieving that or actually don't even plan to do it, just saying yes to keep the person quiet,
yeah,
make them go away. So you can see how that starts to not be in a very effective conversation. And if you can imagine, if you've got the request over on your left and some form of commitment or response over on the right, mm-hmm. if you draw a circle or an oval between those two, that's the commitment loop. And that's in a clockwise direction. That is how every single activity occurs in business, that mm-hmm. commitment loop. And if any part of that commitment loop is broken between those, that request and that promise, because it's actually a promise, that's where the conversation falls apart. So a job description is a form of a request. That's a request that the company has made of you, that you've been presented when you've started or when you move into a new role, that outlines your job.
Yes.
And often you will sign at the bottom of it to say, yeah, I commit to doing this. Mm. Now, we all know that things change, but at the same time, if you sort of are not doing a bunch of duties on that job description, you're failing in your promise, you're failing in your commitment.
Yeah.
So then it's up to the manager to then say, okay, well, on this job description, you know, you committed to do these 20 things and I'm only seeing 10 of them. Can we talk about what's happening with these other 10 or these other five? The five, I know why those five aren't happening, but these five here, why aren't they happening? And that's that conversation that I think we were talking about before that gets avoided.
Mm, yeah. That's really handy to have, an understanding now around that commitment loop, because as leaders, we can often go back and think about times where a team member was not able to deliver as to our expectations, and we that may be able to then track to see, oh right, we can see that the answer that they gave was a slippery maybe, and then we should stop and say, well, okay, and then prompt them to either give a yes or a no, a commit to commit, or you know, a counter offer, to actually have that so that there is closure, there's a definite time outcome, and not kind of that slippery maybe going on there. Yes.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that the other side to it is, of course, you know, we're all in business, and so there's things that change. So we talked about a job description, but just in a normal sort of state of affairs when you're in the business environment, let's say you have been asked by someone in another part of the business to complete a particular, let's say, report, and then other priorities have changed and you've now got something from, you know, someone who's perhaps in more authority, maybe it's the managing director that's now saying, actually, can you just put that to the side? I need you to do X. So it is also, whilst there is the commitment to meet the commitment that you've already given, such as, yes, I'll get this report done for you, there's also the requirement on you to be able to go back to the person who asked you to do that report and say, okay, my goalposts have changed. I've now got this from the managing director, and I now need to put your thing on hold. So, you know, there's renegotiation all of the time. Similarly, let's say that the managing director has also come to see me and has said, I actually don't need that report that we were going to talk about, because I'm now going to get, you know, I'm just going to approach it in a completely different manner. Mm-hmm. So then it is up to that individual to go back and say, I don't need that report anymore, because we all know there is nothing more frustrating than doing a heap of work on something that you then no longer required. is no longer required.
Absolutely. And it can be one of the most deflating things, can't it, from a team member's point of view. You know, talking around having clear and courageous performance conversations really needs to, from the perspective of the team member. We need to, if we're the team member, be able to have a courageous conversation with the managing director or our direct manager if we find that people are coming to us and saying, I need this by, you know, the end of business today, when we just know that we cannot possibly, with all the demands and the commitments that have been placed upon us, that we can't deliver, that we can go back and say, well, actually, and then work our way through that with that particular manager on the best outcome, whether it is critical and so forth. It works both ways, doesn't it?
And that's why we see it as a loop, Anne-Marie, because it is constant, revolving circle, if you like, that where it's toing and froing. It's that conversation that's going between the two people. So it's really made up of multiple requests and multiple responses, whatever those four of one of those four, whichever one it may be. I think the other thing, you know, we've been talking about courageous conversations, and I think, and I sort of alluded to it at one point, but I think the other thing that we're missing to mention is how the emotions fit into it. I know that's, you know, it's a dirty word.
The big
in business.
E word.
We don't talk about feelings. But really, they are absolutely a part of every single thing that we do. And of course, there's lots of decisions we're making where we don't particularly have any feelings around them. Can you do lunch now? Will you, you know, et cetera, et cetera. There's lots of conversations that don't include emotions, but certainly the conversations that we've been talking about, such as courageous conversations, when you perhaps want to raise with someone that you're not happy with their performance, or that something in the job description isn't being done that you do need done to be done. Mm-hmm. Or similarly, as an employee or as a staff member, having to go back to a manager or a senior colleague or even just a colleague and say, no, I can't do that for you. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I can't do that for you. We all know that creates a level of emotion in us, and some people are more comfortable with that than others. And that is really the thing that is driving us to either have that conversation or not have that conversation. And it is also the thing that can impact on how well that conversation goes. Because, of course, the minute emotions are in the conversation, and we're no longer talking just about a task, but we're now talking about, you mean I am not doing this job well, or you mean you're not going to complete this task for me? You know, you can, you know, that's when the conversation is driven from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so important. And I think you were talking earlier around, you know, how we approach the conversation with our team member, being mindful of the way in which they, best take in information and respond in the way that we communicate. If we've got someone who does require a little bit more support and we're direct, that is really going to misalign with their values and how they, you know, and their emotion. It's really going to come on edge. So we need to be mindful about how we respond too, so that we don't cause negative emotions too. Do you have any kind of tips or insights to share to help us better manage our emotions so that we don't negatively impact our team members' emotions and vice versa?
Yeah, look, I do, Anne-Marie, and I've got some tips for both sides, because I think as a leader, there is already whilst we might want to avoid having those difficult conversations with a staff member, I guess we are already in a position of power and authority, so we've been given that just through our role. Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, yes, you want to avoid having a conversation. Well, rather than avoiding, let's talk positively. What you want to achieve is having a win-win type conversation, mm-hmm. where the staff member perhaps has been told where their performance isn't going as well as it could be, but they actually leave feeling positive and ready to tackle that, rather than deflated, demotivated and ready to quit, or in tears. Mm-hmm. So, of course, this is why we often try and avoid these conversations, because we don't want to upset people. So, you know, the tip for the leader in having that conversation is, we've already talked about being mindful of who that employee is and what they're like. And so, you know, do they prefer quite direct conversation, or do they prefer something that's perhaps a bit softer? I think the absolutely best way to approach it, no matter who that other person is to be honest, mm-hmm. but to be courteous, and to speak with integrity. So, you know, accusatory language, the way you did that was really poor, mm-hmm. is a little bit accusatory, whereas if you could talk about the report that you've completed here, I liked this section here, but this section here, I'm just concerned that it isn't reaching the audience, or I'm just concerned that we might not quite be at the level that we need to be. You know, what do you think? So it starts to become a conversation rather than I am right, I am your manager and you've done the wrong thing and you're a very bad person.
Yeah.
So I think that's the start of it. There's lots of tips and, lots available around how you set that conversation up. I mean, ideally it's in, a closed room without the rest of the office listening in. That's not always possible, of course. Ideally it's in a situation where you perhaps sitting next to each other and looking at the document together, rather than me in my great big high-backed manager chair and you on the other side in the teeny-weeny visitor chair on the other side of my large, expansive, impressive desk. You know, there's a few things like that can actually help the conversation. So little things like that. And, of course, many, many managers now have meeting tables in their offices and would use them for that kind of conversation. Certainly sitting next to each other and treating it as a problem shared, as opposed to you've done the wrong thing and you're a very bad person. Mm-hmm. And certainly including things that you like or that are positive and things that you would like to see changed and the reason why. So it gets back to that, for Z reason or for Y reason.
Yeah. I think I've heard feedback, called sandwich feedback, and there may be new terms, where you identify positive, then an area of opportunity for growth and development, and then ending again with something that's positive and provided in that way can be an incredibly, empowering for someone. And just think about how would you prefer to be approached in that way? And if it's from that win-win, as you said, if you think of it from a win-win outcome and look at having a collaborative conversation to how can we make this happen together? What do we need? What maybe we didn't give them everything that they needed to be able to do that job properly. I think it really allows for that win-win outcome. Let's talk about then the current trend that's moving away from traditional annual performance appraisals. And, of course, that doesn't really mean the end of performance management at all. Let's speak a little bit about this too.
Yes, I'd love to speak about that because it's been very topical. We're seeing a lot in the media and a lot of our bigger Australian and international organisations are moving away from that annual performance appraisal. Mm-hmm. We've had hot debate in our office about, how this should look and what it should be about. I've found it really interesting researching this because I think ultimately what the research and the way the trends are going is to have frequent, regular, timely feedback. So we've already talked about having timely feedback. Mm-hmm. And really what this is saying is, don't make the performance appraisal the time. And we always knew this, but I think it still was utilized in this way. Don't make the performance appraisal the time when you actually finally do give them the positives and the negatives, of their overall performance of the last 12 months, 6 months, or even 3 months. Mm-hmm. Be having those conversations really regularly. I think the other thing that's really changing, or that's probably more of a shift, is have the timely feedback. And there's lots of good managers out there that have been doing that for a long time and yet still having the annual performance appraisal. I think the other thing that's really changing is that goal setting and making those performance conversations, as regular as sort of fortnightly, mm-hmm. weekly, monthly, and around, okay, goals, where are we at? How are you going with them? Look, I'm happy with this. I'd like to see a bit more of this, or could you focus more on this area? So it's like a little mini appraisal that's happening constantly, but we're also seeing it linked to the goals. And that's enabling people to be more focused in this changing world that we've already talked about, in our changing workplaces. And it's also enabling or providing a great forum for the manager to be able to set change those expectations. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we were talking about these goals last month, so you know, keeping with 1, 2, and 3, but 4 has completely changed. As you know, that client's pulled out, blah, blah, blah. So now we're going to move to looking at this.
Mm-hmm. Great insights there. And, you know, so often as leaders, what we tend to do is when we think about performance outcomes and performance appraisals is we tend to only focus on areas for growth and opportunity for further development. Yet we forget sometimes to praise and reward, you know, verbally reward or however way, you know, your organization sees fit to mention the things that are working really well, the areas of expertise that, or how, you know, the approach in which our team members are doing their jobs. Because when we just, and it's true, just a comment to say, you know what, you really shine when you do that kind of thing. I really appreciate that. That brings a lot of, you know, incredible outcomes for our team. Thank you so much. When we do those kind of things, it really strengthens, you know, that behavior, and they think, wow, I want to do more of that because it's being noticed, it's being recognized in the workplace. And we can never, you know, go wrong when we continue to point out people's strengths and how they're contributing. Yes?
Yes. Anne-Marie, in any performance appraisal training that we do, I often do a segment on feedback, positive and negative feedback, which is, you know, certainly what you're talking about is the positive feedback. And the way that I describe it for people is it's actually a gift. And I often use the example of imagine if you go to a restaurant and it's a restaurant that's literally down the road from your house and they've been operating for years and it's the kind of food you like. So maybe it's Thai, maybe it's Italian, maybe it's Chinese, I don't know. And when you go to that restaurant, you know, you've been going there for absolutely years, maybe once a month, maybe once every 2 months, but you can pretty much walk. you turn up and they sort of typically sort of know you. They've got pretty good menu. It's really reasonably priced or just in the price range that you're really comfortable with. And you can go there and you know that you're going to get a really, really decent meal. It's going to be very comfortable, good service, and it's just nice. And when something changes in that restaurant, and let's say they've got a couple of new waitresses or waiters and the service has really gone a bit off the boil, or maybe they've got a new chef and, you know, the lasagna or the Vietnamese spring rolls that you've always ordered are now just not the same. Mm-hmm. You know, you might not mention it the first time, but the second time when you go up to pay your bill and you say to the manager, the manager says, oh, you know, it's good to see you again. How did you enjoy your food? And you say, oh, actually, you know, there's most of us in all of the training that I've done, I often give this example. Most of us will actually make a comment then. Mm-hmm. Now, what about a restaurant that you go to overseas? It's a place that you've never been before. You've heard about this restaurant. You're looking forward to it. You go to the restaurant. It's abysmal, really disappointing. It's a place that you've never been before and you're probably not going to go again. Are you going to give feedback as you leave? A lot of people won't.
No.
Because we don't care. Mm-hmm. I don't really care if that restaurant does well. I'm never coming back. They didn't do a great job, but I'm never coming back. Mm-hmm. The restaurant down the road, I'm invested in that restaurant. I want that restaurant to do well. It's really convenient to have a good restaurant down the road from me. So even when it's constructive feedback, even when it's negative feedback, we actually give it as a gift because we want them to improve.
Yes.
So all feedback is a gift, negative or positive. You're absolutely right. We should be giving more positive feedback, and it can really build the trust and it can really build the relationship in the team and between you and that staff member and really create a really good culture. But timely and negative feedback that's been given with integrity can really go a long way too, because you're saying, I actually value you enough to tell you that this isn't going so well and we could do this better.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, look, Heather, I've loved everything that you've said today. And I think, you know, for many of us, we realize the relationships that we're building with stakeholders in our team, our key stakeholders in our business, it can take a long time to build that trust. And sadly, it can be diminished by our approach and how we do or how we, you know, create the environments in our workplace and how we respond or not respond in some instances, and in our courageous, what you talked about, courageous performance conversations. I know this is something we said earlier that many businesses still continue to struggle with and need support around. So if people have listened today and have thought, you know, I've loved what Heather has to say, I'd love to find out more information about your company and how you can support our businesses, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, we have a website, we have phones, et cetera, et cetera. So website is www.wcasolutions.com. We'd love to hear from people, or our phone number here in Perth, +61 89 383 3293. We'd love to hear from people.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Anne-Marie. It's been really enjoyable.
It certainly has. Well, there you go. I know that you've taken a lot of notes and certainly have now what you need to start to have more clear and courageous performance conversations with your team that make a real difference. And please reach out to Heather and find out more about how her company can support you. To find out more about Business Women Australia and how you can become part of this dynamic collective of leaders and learners so you can gain the knowledge and skills that'll enable you to succeed in business, all you need to do is go to businesswomenaustralia.com.au. That's businesswomenaustralia.com.au. Hi, it's Anne-Marie. Have you enjoyed listening to the show and have thought about creating your own podcast so you too can become an influential voice in your industry, but you just don't know where to start? I've created a special gift just for you. It's my free mini training, Podcasting with Purpose, where you'll learn what you need to do to stand out, be heard, and influence your audience from your very first podcast. I'm also giving you my step-by-step podcast production workflow checklist, including the tools I use, as well as a checklist of no-cost and low-cost tools to get you started. To access, go to annemariecross.com/mini-training. That's annemariecross.com/mini-training.